end of this, and then we'll get into the trial board. And of course, as we look at it this morning, and you can sort of see just in the area that he's in, the sparse vegetation that's there. What's he eating on? Rock? And there's nothing much in these regions, but you see how God takes care of him. And of course, you don't see no ribs on him. And usually, an older animal, well, not only an older animal, people, they tend to, like this animal here, you see he's sort of put on. He don't stay as lean as he did in his younger days. I'll put it like that. Just as we don't stay as lean as we did in our younger days. But we see, and he's took care of, you don't see any ribs and stuff. And many animals go through this process. If you look at deers in a certain way, if you're out hunting, you can tell if a buck's, you know, more mature. And at a certain age, these animals seem to digress and go the other way. And last week, I didn't have my major tool. I had one this morning and said it'd probably be better with this, so I went with this. And so the horns would be on this animal about that long from my hand up. And it varied in the females a little bit, just to give you an idea of that. And like we said, they go for long periods of time. They can go long periods of time without water. And as we'll look on into the pronghorn, that's what some hunters rely on. They rely on them coming to water, and that's how they'll take them. Most hunters will take them as a, you know, you're going to have to be shooting out, I'd say, 300 to 1,000 yards on some of them. A 1,000-yard shot, I'm going to tell you right now, is a difficult shot. And they make scopes nowadays that you can hit a button and it'll do your windage, everything. But it doesn't take away the human element of you moving or something like that. You got to be, you know, rock steady on them. And of course, they form herds of 5 to 20 animals. And they're usually, ladies, I think, and just like today, if you think of the wild turkeys usually led by females, the hen turkeys. And these animals here are usually led by the oldest female of the bunch. And but they're slow, not like the pronghorn we're about to get into, but these animals are slow. And of course, their predators are humans, lions, leopards, cheetahs, African wild dogs, and a lot of people forget about these wild dogs. I was telling Steve earlier, we'll try to have a picture of them when we talk about dogs in about 2 or 3 weeks. And of course, they mate in the winter and the early spring. And they are an endangered species. You're not going to find many of them like we do the antelope, or the antelope as we know it. And I really did look in to the other antelope, the picture of the ones like the black buck and the spring buck and all of those, and see what their numbers was in Africa, but you got to think of what, that's sort of the same predators, but I'd say in Africa and the far countries, they've got a lot more to worry about than just man. just about every night they're trying to survive, and every day they're trying to survive. And so that's about all I had. I was going to begin the class and forgot to. I was telling you, if you had any questions or any comments, just raise your hand. You don't have to, you know, be shy about it or nothing. And if I don't know the answer, I'll get it by the next week or something. So if anybody's got anything on the ADAX before we go on, nothing? All right, we'll go on to the prom ordinance. As we see here, the pronghorn is a lot different made animal. It's more of a compact animal. And its horns is usually what trophy hunters go for. They look for a certain measurement in the height of the horn. And they look for a certain measurement where it comes out in the front on those stickers that come out. This part right here. They're looking for a certain measurement. And also in this thick part right here, it's got to have a certain circumference to it that makes it a trophy animal. I remember when we went out to New Mexico, it was full of these pronghorns. Just about every time you see them, though, they're not going to be much around stuff. They're going to be together, and they're going to be out in open, in the wide open. And there's a reason for that, because their eyesight is so good that they can see predators coming from a long way away. And you're talking about a speed animal. I'll get into that more in a minute. They're usually found in Montana and New Mexico, mostly anywhere that is huge open grasslands like Oklahoma, Yellowstone National Park. And they're more of a North American animal. There's antelope. And the difference is, I believe I told you, they shed their horns a lot like a white-tailed deer. A white-tailed deer sheds it. So, well, I'll take it back. They usually shed their horns every year. But there's a deer that you could say they call them non-typical. And in that fashion, these deer keep their horns year round, and they continue to grow. And in non-typical buck, they could be just scattered out everywhere. They could have drop tags coming down. And they have a category. When you score them, they're scored as a non-typical versus one that drops his horn. Now, in a white-tailed deer, when they drop their horns, they might be this size this year, and then their horns grow larger each and every year. And typically the same way that happens on it, just not as much. They're also called a pronghorn buck, and of course they're named just after the whitetail. They have the males are called bucks, and the females are called does. And so they're about 3.5 feet, 3.5 feet at the shoulder. So you could say yardsticks 3 feet. So they're going to be about right here. The shoulder area is going to end right up in here. So they're about 3.5 feet. They'd be a little bit taller than that, you know, with the vertebrae their structure going on up. And they're about 4 to 5 foot long. Now, they weigh anywhere from 85 to 145 pounds. But this animal here is the fastest land mammal in North America. There's nothing faster than it is. Now, of course, now if you went to Africa, there would be comparison to the cheetah. But as for just in North America, there's nothing that is faster than this animal. Unless anybody else knows anything on that. But they can reach speeds from 40 to 60 miles an hour. And you take off, when you, like if you're going home or something, and or down the interstate, you think about that, you get up to 60 miles an hour, and this thing will be running right next to you. And they can fly. And I'm talking about, it don't take them long either. They can have great bursts of speed. One stride on an antelope can be like 20 foot long. That's a long way. And one stride that they're moving. And their horns measure around 12 to 16 inches tall. So here's 12 right here from my finger up and from my other finger below. So they're the height of their horns, and some guys have learned their ears usually are the same length most of the time. So in a trophy animal, these hunters have distinguished the length of their ear. So they try to measure by eye the height from the top of their horns from that ear, and then distinguish whether or not they're a trophy animal or not. Their hair on their body is hollow, and it protects them from the harsh winters. I believe they can get down to like, they withstood winters like 50, down to minus 50 degrees. So they can withstand a whole lot. Mostly their diet is like we said on it. Now, of course, now North America is not going to be like the desert region. They're going to have more to eat on. Out in New Mexico, when we go out there, you think about these elk that live in that region. You think about, you know, there's people that run cattle on these ranches out there, and there's not much out there for on these ranches that I was on. There's not much as the naked eye could see. There's not much to eat out there in New Mexico. For they, not like if you go down through here by Chad Ford's and them, you see all that pasture out there and the grass that they have. It's not going to be like that out there. But you see these animals, so they're in good shape. They've adapted to it. And of course, they're a herd animal, much like the ADAC. And the fawn, when it's born, can outrun a human in 2 days. In 2 days now, they can outrun a human, the little fawn. In 30 minutes after they're born, they're up and running with the herd. Now think about that. 30 minutes, the babies are up and running with the herd. Of course, we know their predators are cougars, which are, you know, current to New Mexico, wolves, bobcats, coyotes. Another one we're about to be talking about is eagles. That's a predator of the pronghorn. With their eyesight, they can see 300 degrees. 300 degrees, and it's something special about that. I'm not going to talk about the eagle sight yet, but it's something special about the eagle sight. I'll let you in on it in a minute. And good swimmers, is what, as I looked up some facts on them, they're good swimmers. Now, how much they swim, I don't think they're going to have to swim too much. I don't know how they come up with that stat, but they say they're good swimmers. But today, in America, there's about 800,000 of them. So their numbers, nothing like the ADACs. They're thriving like everything. And, of course, now they're more Western states and all of Europe. I don't believe you're going to see, unless they're in captivity, you're not going to see them in the East. Did y'all have some in Washington?
If we did, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to add, you know, hearing all these details about its abilities, I was thinking of Jeremiah 13, 23, where God said, can the Ethiopian change his skin or the leopard its spots? And so, like, God, you know, has given each one their abilities for their habitat and what they need. An Ethiopian needs that darker skin to be able to thrive and survive, live well in a place like Africa, and same with the leopard its spots for camouflage. And so I'm impressed by its speed, that it has that, and evidently God knew that it would need that kind of speed, that kind of eyesight to survive.
Good point. Anybody else? All right, let us go on then to...
Do you know what the average weight of these?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mature. What's the weight of the skin down here?
The weight?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 85 to 145 pounds. 145 pounds, they say, in that, you know, that's average, but I'd say the 145 pounds would be more toward the bucks than it would be, you know, toward the does.
So 60 mile an hour in the herd, that would kill somebody. Easy.
Yeah. They're not,
or any other.
I don't preach. Yeah, but they're
do
not.
They use it? Oh, I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
Do they use that as a defense mechanism, though?
No, they're more like a fighter amongst the herd.
Okay.
They're not something that, you know, if you go out here in the field like a bull or something like it, or a cow that's, I know Randy brought up, she's telling me about her dad, you know, this cow that they had, she's real good in nature, she had this calf. And when he went up there, he's going to help his calf up. Well, Mama decided he didn't need to be around him. So he sort of got away from him, and he made sure he was on that mule or utility vehicle when he went out there around him, because she was going to protect that calf. Now, they're not like that. They're more of an animal. You're not going to just walk up on one unless they're real bad. And as far as I know, they're not going to hurt you unless, like, they might want to, take these elk from one region. Well, just like they refurnished here in Kentucky, the elk. You know, they'll trap them in these nets. And the animals are wild. They're not going to mean to hurt you, but as for them coming after you and stuff, no, they couldn't do it. I don't believe they'd do that.
The point I'm trying to make is that weight and that speed, can you imagine what they could do to a compact car?
Yeah.
If there was a collision at that end. And that's why I'm saying that could be a good defense mechanism for them if they're being attacked. They could grab another animal if they're 120 pounds at 60 miles. I mean, they could knock another animal.
But most of the time, I'd say they're sort of like the goat in a way. I know when Billy's fight, they might back up like 2 or 3 feet, you know, hit one another. Now, it's probably hard to them, And if you don't watch it, sometimes a Billy will butt you as well. And I remember I was probably, I don't know, Logan's age or Cody's age, one of them right in there. And my dad said, don't get behind those baby calves. We was in there bottle feeding. And he said, don't walk up behind them. They'll kick you, they'll hurt you. And I didn't pay much attention. And I mean, one of them little rascals kicked me, and I thought he done broke my leg. He hit me. And they had a lot of power. They was little. But of course, I was too. And it might not have bothered me as much if I'd got older, but it hit me pretty hard. Anybody else got anything? All right, let's then go to the eagle. We know the eagles are, our founding fathers made an appropriate choice when he selected the bald eagle as an emblem of our nation. And we'll look in a minute, there was some that wasn't fond of the bald eagle, but they wanted him. And we see the beauty of them. We see the proud disposition of this bird. And it symbolizes strength and freedom. And as we think of America as we live in it today, what are some things that we think about that symbolizes America? Does anybody know something that might, and what I'm going to get at is like the U.S. flag. When you see it, you think about America. And I've got a list of like seven other things. The Statue of Liberty. And I believe that's in New York. Now, I might miss some of these, so because I've never been there, but it's just what I think they are. Of course, the bald eagle is a representative of America. The Liberty Bell, and I believe that's in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. And Mount Rushmore, I think, is located in South Dakota. I knew it was one of the Dakotas. I didn't know if it was north or south. I may be wrong on that. But I think it's South Dakota. And that's something I always wanted to see, but I'm probably not going to get a chance to see it in my lifetime. Mount Rushmore, which I just said, our Pledge of Allegiance. I remember in grade school, I don't even know, are they back to doing that now in lower grades? I know when we was younger, we'd do it every day in school, and then, I don't know, I think it's around some of the time Stephanie and Amanda's in, they took it out for a while. Of course, our national anthem is part of the American tradition, and Uncle Sam. Is there any more that maybe y'all can think of that I left out? All right. So, does anybody know what the eagle on the top, the little emblem of the eagle on the top of the flag stands for? Freedom? Is that what somebody said? Yeah, freedom. That's what it stands for. And I never do that. I just thought, well, somebody just put an eagle on some and some it is. But it's got a freedom. So, the eagle, like we say, is known for beauty. It's known for its bravery, its courage, its honor, and its pride and determination and grace. All of these things. So I sort of went through the Bible and took these things one at a time. I was going to sort of talk about them for a little bit. The beauty is the qualities of a person or thing, such as the eagle, that gives pleasure to the senses or to the mind. And as we look at the landscape, like we talked about the Rocky Mountains, when you can see them, it gives us pleasure. But when we look at it, we know that that God created these things and shows us His power. Of course, there's an inner beauty, as we think of it, and there's an outer beauty as well. And thought about it, the inner beauty over in Proverbs 31, of course, it talks about the virtuous woman. Proverbs 31, and there, in verse 30, it says, "Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing." We know that our beauty, or our bodies, are going to pass away. And as we age, we get older. "But a woman who fears the Lord, shall she be praised." We see that God is not looking at the outward appearance of the woman. He thinks of them more that how she's serving the Lord. And of course, there's many things we could go through in this 31, and I had a list of them in my other Bible, so we're not going to go through that list today. But we see here, he talks about the inner beauty. And and over in 1 Timothy, First Timothy 2:9-10. There we go. 1 Timothy 2:9-10. "In like manner, also the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works." God cares about the woman's outer beauty, how she presents herself. He don't want her present herself in a way that's unpleasing to God, but He wants her to present herself not only to Him, but to others that may see her as well. He wants her to profess her godliness before Him. Over in 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel 16, we see that he'll talk about here the beauty that God cares about. 16, verse 7, "But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or his physical stature, because I have refused him, for the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." So the Lord looks more within us, just as Jesus on the cross recognized the thief, recognized his heart, and he told him, "Today you should be with me in paradise." We see as we go on.
Thomas.
Oh,
I was just going to add, I was thinking about that 1 Samuel 16, 7 verse as well. And the eagle is certainly a beautiful bird, and that's why so many countries really do pay homage to it with their flags. And national crests and those kinds of things. And it's a good point that, you know, we kind of also elevate beautiful humans as well. And whether one is beautiful on the outward or not, the inward soul is the most beautiful prized possession of all. And I think what we're able to see is that God can make these beautiful things in nature and also in humankind. And we can trust that He has made the most beautiful soul for every individual person. That's what He actually cares about and looks for.
As we think about the brave, the eagle's not one that is very fearful. He's the king of the sky. Some claim that the condor, which is a huge bird as well, but when I get into showing what this bird can do later on, that how he uses himself, and it'll show his bravery, and he's not, as some birds, they or the animals, when they hear or sense a storm coming, they run and try to find places to stay out of the storm, but he'll be different. To be brave is feeling or showing no fear. We know that in Deuteronomy 31, Moses was getting old, up in age, and of course we know that he could not enter into the land of Canaan. And he was there. Joshua was to be the new leader. Let's read Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31 and 4 through 6. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the king of the Amorites, and their land when he destroyed them. Verse 5, the Lord will give them over to you that you may do to them according to every commandment which I have commanded you. Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them, for the Lord your God, He is the one who goes with you. He will not leave or forsake you. So Moses was encouraging Joshua, when you encounter these other nations that come up against you, don't be afraid. I'll take care of them. You just continue to do what I asked you to do. And in doing so, you know, that's hard for us to imagine when we're in that moment, Like if we're out and somebody breaks into our house, we'll just say you've been practicing with a gun and you continue to hit these targets. That's a whole different ball game when somebody's coming through there and they've got a gun. Then fear will set in. And I'm sure when they seen these other come, they'd already, you know, spied out the country. And so he gave him instruction to be brave, to be strong, and that the Lord was with him. And God promised him he'd be with him through his journey. And that was also not only an encouragement to Joshua, it was an encouragement to the ones that were following him, that he would take care of them. As we know, we remember through the parting of the Red Sea. Here they were, the Egyptian army was coming down on them. And the Red Sea parted. They went across. They you would think, of course, God was protecting them. The horses were in dismay. They couldn't approach them. God was not going to let them catch up to them. When they were about to come out, it was all right. God was going to take care of them. They come out of the Red Sea. Pharaoh's army approached, and we all know what happened. The sea closed on them. And there's three types of bravery we can look at. There's physical bravery, like firefighters, policemen, soldiers, in that way. That's a physical type of bravery. Psychological bravery, facing the difficulties that we go through in life. It takes bravery and strength to do that as well. And also there's a moral bravery, speaking up for what is right. If you know somebody's in the wrong, just as they may say something about God's word, and you know somebody is in the wrong, you have that, you've got the right to speak up for that. Yeah, sure, they might not change what they're doing or what they believe in, but you've got, it's your obligation to speak up to that and show them they're in the wrong. And as we think about if we're confronted, and sometimes when people want to put us in the wrong situation, well, I'm friends to them, it doesn't matter, I'll go through it this time, and then I won't do it more. Well, no, you ain't supposed to go through it at all. You're supposed to stand up for what is right and turn away. And I'll bring this up again. Steve done that lesson. There's a little goldfish up there, and there was one going this way, the whole school of them going this way. He stood for what was right. He wasn't going with the crowd. That's the way we shouldn't be. Steve.
These are good points about bravery. And you mentioned about God leading the Israelites out in the Red Sea. And I think that's part of what Exodus 19:4 was referring to, with, you know, how He said, "You've seen what I did to the Egyptians, and I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." So God using the eagle to kind of describe that process. On page 13 in our booklet, where it talks about the eagle there, I like what it was talking about, how about midway through the page there, it says that they are on the lookout for others that, speaking about other birds, that may prey on them or might have thoughts of taking their kill. Contrary to this behavior, the eagle never looks back when it's going for its kill. He is the master and ruler of the skies and fears no other aerial predator. He intensely focuses on his prey, showing no signs of fear or trepidation, only the determination, determined will to swiftly capture his prey. And so he has this element, like you said, that of bravery that God wants to see in us. And to tie in with that to the scriptures, I was thinking of 2 Timothy chapter 1, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, where Paul is writing to Timothy. He says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." And so that's, the eagle is a good example of not having the spirit of fear.
Yeah, just imagine that picture, like you brought up that verse, and I'm probably going to say this again, and it's just like, not that the eagle was coming down in there and grabbing God's people and taking them out of there, but it's like they were, the whole nation was on, you see his wings were out and they were riding, you could say, out of the bondage they were in, and paints a beautiful picture of them riding out on the eagle. And yeah, thanks for your comments on that. Anybody else? Next, I'd like to get into courage. Courage is the strength of mind that makes one able to meet danger and difficulties that are placed before us. We remember, you know, the story of Esther there in Esther 5, when she had to ask the king to intervene of the situation that was going on. And she had to have courage in doing so. We know that the law at that time, if she approached the king without permission, she could be killed. And so she went on and asked Mordecai to have all the Jews feast and pray for her for 3 days. But we could see the courage that it took for her to do something like that, especially at that time of age and her knowing what would happen to her at that time. We also remember Goliath. Of course, him being the champion of the Philistines. And we see the lack there of courage that Saul and the man had when he would approach them out. But in turn, we turn and we see the courage that David has. What did David do when he came upon the Philistine? When it was time for battle, he ran to him. It took courage for him to face him, and he wasn't running away from the situation. And courage to God is trusting in Him, and as our true source of strength, we need to be ones that trust in God. We're out of time this morning. We're going to try to finish up the Eagle Wednesday night and probably start in, I believe it's on the Ant, would be next. And and we should get into the Ant. And I got a few more to go over with this, and we'll start talking more about the Eagle. Thank you for your attention and your comments this morning.